This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Oh, he got him
in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Whoa.
And here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen,
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the September 26th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Calvon. I am Jason Floyd. Coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast, well, a lot of stuff has happened since we did a show last week. We're going to get into the ruling that John Jones got with USADA, that tremendous press conference we saw with Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov, where it was a Conor McGregor show, and, well, no one should be surprised with what happened. Plus, we're going to recap what happened last weekend at UFC Sao Paulo and Bellator 205. We're going to speak with Bellator 206 fighters Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. Of course, that's going to be taking place on Saturday in San Jose, California. Of course, we're going to preview that fight card as well. Plus, we'll have our weekly buy-sell segment. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Man, I am doing quite well. I don't really understand this sport, because some weeks we don't get a lot of news, Jason, and then other weeks it just comes in droves. I mean, that's what we're going to talk about. So many big stories, so much emotion. And even later in the night, last night, I almost thought we were going to add another topic to the show, the creation of a new super fight division between Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier, the 165-pound title. I went to sleep having seen the tweets from Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier, and I wake up and apparently the new super fight division is not a real thing. But I would not be surprised if Diaz and Poirier is that November 3rd main event.
Yeah, it was. I went to bed early on Tuesday night after having a long Monday night and getting up very early on Tuesday morning. I mean, I crashed very early on Tuesday night. Woke up to seeing the tweets by Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz. And when I first saw the tweets, I was like, okay, let me hit UFC.com. Didn't see anything up there, so clearly, it was like, okay, probably not happened. Breck Okamoto had a tweet on late Wednesday evening saying, just spoke to Dana White on the phone. He has denied any plans of a 165-pound title fight at Madison Square Garden. Says he's working on a main event for UFC 230. There's some speculation maybe it's Yoel Romero versus Alexander Gustafsson, but honestly, if I was a UFC, I'd make Nate Diaz the main event. I think you got to find out, is Nate Diaz a draw when Conor McGregor is not on the other side of the octagon as a pay-per-view? Quite honestly, do I think that having potentially a Gustafsson Romero fight is magically going to boost pay-per-view sales? No, I do not. Obviously, the UFC's got an issue right now at 230, and I know Errol Hawani had this tweet on Tuesday where basically he outlined, when it came to all of the champions in the UFC about the fact of how essentially none of them are available for 230. But, I'm surprised Bellator has not put in a 165-pound weight class. I don't understand, and in that tweet from Brett Okamoto, he's noting that Dana is saying there's not a 165-pound title fight for UFC 230. In that tweet, it doesn't exactly make it off that Dana White is so against the 165-pound weight class, which he clearly was at one point. And I just, when you look at, the issues UFC has with title fights always being on pay-per-views, and adding a 165-pound weight class would be good for fighters.
Yeah, I think Nate Diaz is going to fight at UFC 230 just because Romero, like you mentioned, Romero Gustafsson is a fight that, me and you will get real excited for. But it's not going to make a single difference in the buy rate. I mean, it might add 100 buys, but the difference in pay-per-view buy rate between a UFC 230 event headlined by Romero and Gustafsson and a UFC 230 event without it headlined by, Rockhold versus Weidman, that difference is minuscule because Romero and Gustafsson just don't move the needle. Nate Diaz moves the needle a whole lot. You know, title fights move the needle, and there's three or four star fighters that move the needle. And for UFC 230 in New York, in Madison Square Garden, this should be a needle-moving show. There aren't too many options. That's why I think Nate Diaz is probably going to fight. And hey, Dustin Poirier seems like an okay opponent, or a hell of an opponent if you're a hardcore MMA fan. In terms of the 165-pound division, I think it makes all the sense in the world, Jason, with the caveat that I believe if you include a 165-pound division, I think the welterweight division should be moved up to 175. I don't like the idea of a 5-pound difference. And the question, I think, when you make that transition is, what do you do with your current welterweight champion? Does he get grandfathered? Should Tyron Woodley be asked, what division do you want to compete in? And that division is now the welterweight division, or that championship. He goes with that championship to the next division. Does he need to re-win a championship? What would you do for a guy in Woodley, Jason, where this is a very important part in his career? Because to be quote-unquote stripped of the championship, I think would suck, because he is piling up in the record books in terms of defending his title.
Well, I think Woodley would become the 175-pound champion, because, look, I don't think Woodley can make 165.
He looks like a flyweight. You're not wrong, though. I mean, 175 is probably the weight class to go to. But I definitely think you should at least ask him, you know, throw a feeler out there and be like, which division do you want to fight in, just because, you know, you don't want to force a guy. But, yeah, 155, 165, 175, 185, 205, I think all we're missing is the Rich Franklin division, and we'll be set.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier, it was initially announced as a co-main event of UFC 230, I mean, you know, how many weeks ago? But yeah, I mean, look, Gustafsson Romero is not going to, you know, push the pay-per-view needle by. When you look at the rest of that UFC 230 card, you know, interesting matchups, you know, Jacare, you know, taking on Dave Branch, has a lot of meeting there at 185 pounds. Israel Adesanya taking on Derek Brunson. Outside of that, I don't know, you know, Rockhold Wyman's on that card, but overall, in terms of a pay-per-view, I do think the UFC does need to add another major fight. So we'll see. You know, look, I think that it wouldn't surprise me if in the next 12 to 24 hours, or maybe by the time that people are listening to this podcast, that the main event is already announced for that. But, you know, really, the two big news items last week were John Jones in the USADA agreement and Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov. And I do want to start off with John Jones. And I will tell you, Daniel, I'm shocked at what ultimately happened. I never saw John Jones getting less than 2 years. Just never saw it coming. You know, I talked to a lot of people over the last year or so. People's opinion in this industry that I value, they've never deterred me in the wrong way when I've asked them questions or whatnot. But I did not talk to anyone outside of the Jones camp that thought he was getting less than 2 years. I was floored when USADA made this announcement.
USADA is done. It is absolutely 100% done. And to be honest with you, we can touch on this later, but everyone involved, including California, I know California left it to USADA. And at the end of the day, John Jones still has to reapply for his license, so I guess they could very well revoke it for 2 years, not approve it. But I do feel like California may have dropped the ball a little bit in terms of not just adjudicating this case, even though I guess it was a USADA violation. I don't know. I don't want to focus on California or anybody else. I want to focus on USADA. That's what I want to focus on, because they are absolutely done. This is insane. Absolutely stupid. Screams of collusion. And you were shocked. And I am shocked too, but even though I was shocked, I don't know if I was surprised. And I know that makes absolutely no sense, but the thing is, it was kind of a laughing matter where you could be like, well, of course John Jones is gonna get off easy because he's John Jones. You know, that was the way it works. But that's not how a quote-unquote anti-doping agency should work, especially when you're talking about an anti-doping agency that is what? It's funded by the UFC, the test, is it not? So when you have a deal funded by a promotion, and this agency comes up with BS reasons to allow one of the top draws for the promotion that pays you, when you give him time off, his suspension, which maybe should be 4 years, to be completely honest with you, if you look at the violations, when that happens, it loses all integrity. And here's the worst part, Jason. if you are going to ruin the careers of fighters like Tom Lawlor, like Josh Barnett, you must be a fair organization. USADA ruins the careers of fighters, doesn't offer them opportunities, and they go in the same stroke and are not fair when it comes to guys like John Jones.
Tom Lawlor, I'm glad you mentioned brought up Tom Lawlor's name, because I think he was the first name I thought of when this ruling came down.
But Josh Barnett as well. And Josh Barnett's career was completely – and this guy's up there in age. Lawler's also totally screwed. Even Lyoto Machida, all these guys suspended. It's just insane. Why weren't they given the same opportunity? Surely they were all as forthcoming as John Jones. Surely they have more integrity than John Jones. No disrespect to John Jones, but if you look at his rap sheet, it ain't great. I don't understand how his integrity played a role in the fact that his suspension was reduced. The reasoning for and the logic behind his suspension being reduced that we were given, man, that's a bunch of malarkey. It's a bunch of crap. You know what else pisses me off too? Is the quote from Dana White about, like, the science doesn't lie. What are you talking about, Dana?
Let's give a little background information on this. Okay, so when USADA made the announcement of this ruling, they noted that Jones will be providing substantial evidence to USADA, and his 30-month suspension reduction is potential punishment even before the proceeding began. Now, the note is related to Rule 10.6.1.1. Now, I'll be honest, I was not familiar with this rule, and when it comes to USADA, the people that I looked at are Denspace and Ian Kidd. Those guys are great in terms of it. Now, here's what 10.6.1 reads. Quote, USADA in its sole discretion may suspend all or part of the period of ineligibility and other consequences imposed in an individual case in which it has results management authority where the athlete or other person has provided substantial assistance to USADA or another anti-doping organization, criminal authority, or professional disciplinary body which results in one USADA or another anti-doping agency organization discovering or bringing forward an anti-doping policy violation by another person, and the information provided by the person providing the substantial assistance is made available to USADA or two, which results in a criminal or disciplinary body discovering or bringing forward a criminal offense or the breach of professional rules committed by another person, and the information provided by the person providing substantial assistance is made available to USADA. The extent to which the otherwise applicable period of ineligibility or other consequences imposed may be suspended shall be based on the seriousness of the anti-doping policy violation committed by the athlete or other person and the significance of the substantial assistance provided by the athlete or other person to the effort to the eliminated doping in sport. If the athlete or other person fails to continue to cooperate and to provide and complete and credible substantial assistance upon with which a suspension of period ineligibility, if I can say that correctly, or other consequences was based, USADA shall reinstate the original period of ineligibility and other consequences. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of stories about basically John Jones being a snitch now. And of course, his manager, Malky Kawa, kind of trying to call that fake news. We'll get into that in a second. Here is about, I don't know if I text this to you, not or Daniel. I know I said this to some other people. USADA just went Robert Mueller on John Jones.
USADA went Robert Mueller on John Jones.
They've turned him. They have flipped him because clearly, I mean, look, you know, he was looking at a 4-year suspension. You know, now he's eligible to come off suspension. Basically 1 month from now. They flipped him, and I've said this before about John Jones in relation to this, and I'll continue to say this. It is tough to give John Jones the benefit of the doubt when it comes to anti-doping at this point. Even if you are the biggest John Jones fan, and look, I am a fan of greatness, and I truly believe John Jones is the greatest fighter of all time. Now, do I sit back and question kind of his career? No question I do. Because of this isn't the first time. This is now the second time this has come up. And at the end of the day, the athlete is responsible for everything they put into their body. And, you know, I was reading this article on MMA Junkie, from Malky, where he was basically talking about where, you know, John now is taking the additional steps to make sure, you know, sending his stuff to USADA, sending his stuff to Jeff Nowitzki to get tested. I'm like, man, why weren't you doing this before?
Look, man, I'm so tired of Malky Kawa. I really am. And the thing that Dave Meltzer brought this up, and I kind of forgot about it, but when we're talking about honesty, transparency, you know, integrity, man, the John Jones camp failed early on when they put out, basically they showed results of a blood test that showed that he didn't test positive, but it was a bunch of BS. Because the blood test doesn't show for what John Jones failed for in the first place. But they just put it out there as if this was proof that he hadn't failed the test. So that is the camp that he surrounds himself in. People who attempt to misinform the public in order to get them to believe them. I just don't understand how one of the best fighters on the planet allows himself to be associated with Malky Kawa. Because it just rings BS every time his name's in the headline. Every time I see it. John Jones and his snitch on his teammates. Stuff like that. Maybe some of it's true, but at the end of the day, this is a guy who went and did all your tests for you when it came to getting reinstated and educating yourself. So, again, I just have so little patience for USADA. I give zero benefit of the doubt to USADA. John Jones clearly cheated. I think that is clear based on the amount of failures he's had. And he's not getting punished. And it's something where I want to see John Jones fight again. I absolutely thoroughly enjoy watching the career of John Jones. This guy is probably the best fighter to have ever fought. But it will be hard to say it unequivocally because of what he has put in his body and what he has failed for. So, again, I just want to get back to the point that my general conclusion is I am done with USADA. I have zero respect for it, and I just feel as though fighters should figure out a way to come together and I don't know, just stop getting tested. I mean, this is an organization that is super annoying to all fighters. You have to give them your location all the time so they can randomly drug test you. And it's like, if you are going to give this much personal information to an organization, this better be a damn good doping agency. And this is not a damn good doping agency. This is an agency that acquiesces to whatever the UFC wants.
Well, and I've always said this about USADA. I think the biggest part of the issue with USADA is more about the fact of this wasn't collectively bargained. This was something that was forced onto fighters. And fighters have to look at themselves in the mirror on that and just basically say, you know, look, you know, we should have stepped in a lot sooner on this. You know, the thing about Malky, I mean, look, he is out there doing PR for John Jones, and he is trying to spin this in a way that makes John look the best. You know, the whole, you know, the snitching thing, you know, whether you are Team Jones or not Team Jones on this, and I always talk about this, perception may not always be reality, but when John Jones walks into Jackson Wink, you think there's not fighters looking at him a little weird at this point? Because, you know, especially what if you were a fighter who maybe it came up in a conversation and John heard it? Are you sitting there going, man, is John going to USADA and telling them about my conversation? You know, John's in a bad position right now. You know, I think USADA, and if you read there's an article up on MMA Junkie where USADA basically responded to what Malky had to say. You know, Malky was on Ariel's show yesterday. He was on Luke's show on Monday, I should say. And this was a USADA spokesperson, Danielle Urich, who said this, quote, "Importantly, if the athlete or support personally fails to continue to cooperate and provide credible, substantial assistance, USADA will reinstate the original sanction. Those rules set out in 10.6.1.1 are crystal clear, and if they are not met, an individual would be considered for a reduction based on substantial assistance. Now, that to me, that was almost a quote of basically USADA telling Malki Kawa, stop doing what you're doing because you're not being completely honest out there. And it will be interesting when John does talk. It'll be interesting to see when he is booked for a fight. If I was, Daniel Cormier, I understand why he had the comments that he had last Wednesday night on UFC Tonight. I understand it. If I am Daniel Cormier, I have to be concerned at this moment because Cormier clearly was setting himself up for one more fight before he retires, even though Dana White kind of didn't necessarily think that maybe he's going to retire in March. But if I am DC, I'm concerned that Brock Lesnar goes, if I'm looking for a huge payday, I got pay-per-view points. Boy, John Jones would be a more lucrative fight financially than Daniel Cormier.
And the problem is, there may only be one fight for Brock Lesnar because there's a chance, a phenomenal chance, that he's going to go out there and get his ass kicked. I mean, this is not a top-tier heavyweight. This is a guy who can win fights by taking him down and hitting him with masturbation, ground and pound, which I tell you what, that looks great, and he's a big star, but he's not Stipe Miocic. He's huge. He's a great athlete, but he's getting older, and he spends a lot of time choreographing matches. So it's one of those deals where there's going to be one lucky person, and it's either going to be Jon Jones or it's either going to be Daniel Cormier. One of them is going to get the Brock Lesnar fight. Brock Lesnar holds all the cards.
Yeah.
He can decide to have a match in Saudi Arabia. The UFC can pass the buck there where they can say it's the only fight Brock would want. And I think it's pretty clear that if you're Brock Lesnar, the only fight between DC and Jon Jones is Jon Jones. I'm not super positive he cares about the championship all too much. I think it's all about the payday, as maybe it should be. And I think the Jon Jones fight would be it. By the way, just going back to the whole deal where, man, that 10.61, what's 10.62? We do whatever the UFC wants. That's probably the actual code. What pisses me off is USADA coming out with quotes like that where, listen, John, if you're a bad boy, shut up, USADA. It's hard. I can't believe you can talk with the UFC's balls in your mouth. I think the problem is this with Jon Jones turning over state evidence, Jason. One, what can USADA do with this evidence? Can they suspend people? I feel like they can only suspend people for failing the test.
Boy, if you start seeing some Jackson Wink fighters get popped, you know what people are going to start saying.
That reminded me of something, too. Speaking of how USADA sucks, they did not test the guy. We've talked about this, but again, they did not test the guy until a news report came out, and they gave him one test all year.
I think he's now been tested 3 times.
Wow. Insane. It's almost like they've been pressured by media reports to test somebody, which is insane because you would think a guy with Jon Jones' history would get tested. Again, USADA has just so much egg on his face. It's a doping agency that I was pretty excited because it seems though they had all their ducks in a row. And some aspects of the organization work real well. But it's been a total failure.
This is what I love about DC's comment last Wednesday, where he's like, hey, USADA, stop showing up at my house at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is one of those things of, and I understand the science aspect of why you're showing up at 6 a.m., but it's also like, man, can you have a little compassion? I wonder how many times USADA has got to a house and has woke up a fighter's baby or young child. I wonder how many times that's happened.
And if you're gonna do it, be a good organization, be a good agency.
How about you just send off a text like at 5:55? Hey, Daniel, this is John Smith from USADA. Just want to give you the heads up. I'm gonna be at your house in about 5 minutes, man. I didn't want to wake anybody up if you're the only one up.
I don't even know.
How many fighters do you think are up at 6 a.m.?
Not very many, because the thing is, you're trying to rest your body. every hour of sleep is important, and I think a lot of guys get their cardio in the morning, but most guys probably don't wake up at 6. And I think you got to talk to some fighters, Jason, and ask them what that's like, that 6 a.m. Do they send the text, you up, Do they knock on the door?
I remember. How's that
work? That's a good question.
I remember having a conversation with Louis Smolka when he was in the UFC, and this is when he was drinking, and he had told me, he's like, man, they show up at my house. He goes, I was hammered. And he goes, the guy basically had to sit in my house as I was putting water in my body just to be able to go to the bathroom.
That's hilarious.
Okay.
By the way, if you're hammered, you can still pee.
You know what would be a good podcast?
What's that?
USADA testers talking about their stories of going to see athletes.
Yeah, these people are just trying to get paychecks, and they got, that sounds awesome.
Oh, man. I always wonder, like, when you're in college, at what point do you say, you know what, I want to be a drug tester where I have to sit there and watch someone pee?
I don't think that ever comes up unless you've got a really weird fetish.
Yeah, I mean,
that's about it.
But look, at the end of the day on John Jones, it's surprising. It'll be interesting to see how the UFC handles this situation. I mean, look, if you're the UFC, it's got to be tough to trust John Jones just based on history. As I said, I mean, look, even if you are Team Jones, you can't give John the benefit of the doubt at this point. It's tough to trust him until he can earn everyone's trust back, and this is always going to be out there on him. You know, in terms of his next fight, I mean, you know, and people were mentioning Gustafsson, and I'm just like, if I'm in Team Jones, I mean, I know they had a great fight, you know, several years ago, but Gustafsson just doesn't move the needle.
Yeah, I think that would be a fight that you just take the fight for fight's sake if you're in Jones' camp. But, yeah, there's only two fights that stick out to me that move the needle. It's DC, it's Lesnar. But, yeah, I guess John Jones can go back to rehabilitating his image. Maybe he can go walk in the woods with Ariel Helwani for 40 freaking minutes again, and we can talk about how great of a person. Like, it's annoying because we do the same thing over and over again.
I will tell you, I have found myself becoming more of a Daniel Cormier supporter through all this.
Yeah.
And I feel for Cormier now because I think he's going to lose the Lesnar fight. Could you imagine if he loses a Lesnar fight and it's Lesnar Jones early on 2019?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome, and that's sad. It's sad.
Here's the question: we don't have this in buy sell. Well, let's just mention this here right now. You buy or sell in Daniel Cormier retires when he turns 40.
Sell.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Buy or sell, John Jones's fight gets canceled. He never fights again because he gets suspended again.
Oof. See, now look, he'll fight again. But will he get suspended again? Oof.
That's a good one.
I hope not. Because you know what? Because look, at the end of the day, we always talk about fights and fighters that get you excited to sit at home or go to a bar on a Saturday night. And John Jones is one of those fighters.
No doubt about it. By the way, would you buy or sell DC retiring at 40?
Oh, sell, yeah. There's no way.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll go get some John Jones.
Look, I think if you're Cormier, I have to think that your hope is fight Lesnar in, like, February-ish, and then you fight Jones in the summer of 2019 at 205.
Yeah.
Because I understand where DC's coming from, you know, kind of his thoughts, but as a competitor aspect, DC wants a trilogy fight with Jones. You know he does as a competitor.
Yeah, as a competitor, because that would be just the cherry on top for his legacy. It would be more than a cherry. It would be like 15 cherries on top to get a win over John Jones. If he does that, best of all time discussion. That's what Daniel Cormier put himself in.
Oh, Cormier, if he gets a Jones fight and he beats Jones, it's tough not to say Daniel Cormier is the greatest fighter of all time.
You know who might be a threat to that?
Who's that?
Conor McGregor.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, first off, no one should be surprised by that press conference last week.
You know what? Conor McGregor, I'd give him a B-, C+. He was awesome for being Conor, but it wasn't his best stuff. Khabib couldn't really go back and forth with him, you know?
But here's the thing. Here's why Conor is so good at the mental warfare. He researches. And it's great to see Mike Russell and Kareem Zidane get a little props for their coverage on people related to Khabib Nurmagomedov.
You know what I would like to see is how Connor researches. Are people in his camp reading?
Is he reading? I would guarantee you there have been people for weeks that were reading nothing but Mike Russell and Kareem Zidane. It wouldn't shock me if people in the McGregor camp reached out to both either one of those guys. I haven't talked to Mike or Kareem about it, but it wouldn't surprise me. I believe I saw Mike was talking about those two guys, I guess, are going to do a podcast together, and they're talking about I don't know if they're going to do this, but I guess they were talking about I saw it on Twitter about releasing it the week of UFC 229. I mean, look, there is a I think it's well known in terms of the people that follow the MMA game, the MMA media business. And there is a reason why some people have avoided the topics that Mike Russell and Kareem Zidane have spoke about. There is a reason. Everyone knows it. And this is, and I'm not afraid to say it, there's reporters out there that were scared to lose access to a certain manager's fighters. There's no questions about that. But the thing with Connor is it's just he knows how to promote a fight. I do think the UFC made a mistake in not having the fans there. I think that played part of it. I will tell you this, as we're speaking here on Wednesday morning, when that press conference took place last Thursday after it was over, I got on a marketing call with our bar and I said, fellas, we got to get proper number 12 whiskey in the building for October 6th. And this afternoon it's being delivered. So I am interested to sit there and taste this whiskey to see if it's any good, because if this whiskey is any good, and my understanding is Connor, it's his complete brand, 100%. He was involved in the making of it and all that. If this thing is good, he's going to have some FU money for the rest of his life.
Oh, dude, if he made a good whiskey, if he made a halfway decent whiskey, oh, that's like the adult version of the George Foreman grill, man. People will buy the hell out of it. You know, I'm even interested. I mean, I smart move by you to get that bot. You got to figure out a way to advertise that, though, just to make sure people are aware.
Oh, already on that, Daniel. Don't worry. It is part of the marketing plan. I mean, look, it's and I tweeted this. If you are a bar that is showing UFC 229, you have to have that whiskey in your building on fight night. Because yeah. You know, because A, the logo is going to be on the mat, which I think is brilliant marketing by Connor to work that into his UFC deal. But, I mean, there's going to be Connor fans that are going to roll into your bar next Saturday night and are going to go, you got that whiskey, right?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I may just get it. I mean, I may have to buy some liquor for Khabib, too, you know, and have some friends over. And
get some vodka.
Get some vodka. Make a white Russian like Big Lebowski. I've never had that before. I probably want that. Sounds kind of
good. I'm a whiskey guy. I like whiskey. If I am drinking a, you know, a liquor drink, it is whiskey. So I'm interested to see if this tastes any good. I'm pretty much a Jack Daniels guy. So I'd be interested to see if this thing's any good. But yeah, if it's good, I mean, look, it's, you know, as I think I'm pumped for next Saturday night. The rest of that pay-per-view, just give me Conor Khabib. You can literally charge me $70 for Conor Khabib, no other fights, and I'd be good.
Yeah, I tell you what, though. I'm pretty excited for Ferguson Pettis. That's not the greatest fight in the world because Tony Ferguson should be fighting Khabib or something. But should be a great fight.
We both know. Ferguson's on that card as a backup plan. We both know that.
And maybe we're finally going to get Khabib and Ferguson. You know what I'm excited for is to see Sean O'Malley fight again as well. I think Sergio Pettis for me is a good fight. And also, what I'm interested in, just to throw, is the business of the buy rate. Because I will say this, it came in that Canelo GGG did 1.1 million buys, which is a little under what I thought it was going to
do. I'm not surprised by that, man. I looked at that on my DirecTV. It was $85. I was like, oh.
That is insane. I would not have spent $85.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, and I can tell you, it was not cheap for a bar to get it. It was pretty damn expensive, way more expensive than what it costs to get a UFC pay-per-view. But that if it would have been $65, I probably would have ordered it.
It would have been interesting to see if that was the difference, but I don't know. I think it's one of those things where
I don't.
If people were going to buy this fight regardless of the price, if they were interested.
But like on Conor Khabib, and this is my ultimate question. Look, if it does 2.5 million buys, that would be unbelievable. I don't think that's realistic. I just don't. I hope it does. I just don't think it's realistic. When you look at what Conor has done, I mean, what was the last UFC pay-per-view he did with Eddie? I think it was 1.6 million, as I recall. Or maybe that was the Diaz fight was 1.6 million. Okay, so is your belief that you're going to add 900,000 more buys because of his Mayweather fight? And, I mean, let's be honest about it. Is Khabib really adding a ton to the pay-per-view? I don't think so. You know, and I've said this, you know, one of the guys I watch fights with, my buddy Mike, he is a hardcore fan. He sits there and he watches everything. But, you know, he's not a fan of Khabib's style. You know, that is a style that, yes, it is a very dominating style. But you have to understand that is a fighting style that some people just don't care for.
Yeah, I think it's a fighting style that maybe people will be interested in against Conor, because, you know, there's a lot of people that if you don't like Conor, you just want to see him lose. So that's where it is. But moving forward, you know, taking guys down, laying on top of them, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. I get that. I think Khabib's an interesting opponent. He isn't a huge name opponent, but I think some aspects of who he is interesting. I think people get excited for it. And people just want to see Conor lose on one side of the aisle, and they just want to see him knock people out on the other side. So that's really all they want to see.
I don't root for him to lose.
Well, you don't. People do.
And this is just flat out being honest. Anyone who listens to this podcast, you know we're brutally honest here. Conor McGregor is good for me as a marketing person with the sports bar that shows UFC pay-per-views. That's the cold honest truth, because he brings a crowd that just no other fighter brings in. And you know, obviously we're going to talk a lot about this more next week, but I think one of the things that fascinates me about this fight is, I mean, look, there's always this, oh, Conor can't stop a takedown, which there's a lot of truth to that. But will Khabib change his fighting style? Because if he comes out in that forward pressure that he constantly does, is he going to walk right into a left hand?
That's an interesting thing. I think you got to adjust it where you do not walk into a left hand. That cannot be a part of the game plan. Is let's get knocked out. But you are right. His approach lends itself very much to Conor putting him away. But again, it's like if you become one of the biggest stars, you know, of a combat sport, people love you, people hate you, and they want to see you fight. They want to see you win, or they want to see you lose. And that's where Conor's. I think that's going to transcend. I don't know, 2.5 million buys is where it's at, because again, this is a cold product. I mean, you look at maybe the TV ratings for what we had for Sao Paulo, and we're talking third lowest primetime numbers this year. The product's cold, but I think Conor and Khabib will still do over 1.6, 1.7, maybe 2 million buys. I don't know. The 1.1 million buys for Canelo GGG kind of scares me off, the idea of 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that you definitely have to kind of put out there of what is exactly going to do. You know, look, I hope that it goes out there and pulls 2.5 million buys. That would be unbelievable. I think that 1.5 to 1.8 range is probably where you got to be looking for there. But, you know, only time is going to tell on that one. But we'll see. But you mentioned about UFC Sao Paulo took place last week. Of course, I will tell you, watch this card via DVR was a pretty easy card to get through because of kind of how the fights went. Thiago Santos gets a TKO victory at the end of the third round against Eric Anders. You know, obviously there's a lot of talk about that. Eric Anders had a great tweet on Sunday morning, said he hadn't been that tired since his wedding night. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, there's a couple of things that really stuck out to me about that main event. On the Thiago Santos side, we have seen positions in his past UFC run where someone has got him to the ground, got his back, and his night was over. And you saw him battle that off. So, and to me, that's one storyline that I feel that a lot of people aren't talking about in this fight. You look at Eric Anders, and if you still have it on your DVR, go to the final 90 seconds or so of that third round. When Eric Anders' mouthpiece falls out, which may have been just under the 1 minute mark, And Goddard stops the action fairly quickly to put the mouthpiece back in Eric Anders' mouth. Eric Anders could barely stand at that point. I mean, he was leaning on Thiago Santos. And, you know, and when I woke up on Sunday morning, I had a manager text me. He said, he's like, man, you got to watch this fight. He goes, I'd love to get what your thoughts are on this. Where, you know, was the Anders corner going to try to send him out there for the fourth round? Clearly, there was no way he was going to be go out there for the fourth round. But I will say this about Eric Anders. Even though you saw the exhaustion hitting on in that third round, he was still constantly going forward. So that really stuck out to me about Eric Anders.
Oh, dude, what a great main event. Fight Anders lost, but, man, he looked good doing so. Just because that third round was awesome. The whole fight was great. Back and forth, Thiago Santos, you mentioned it, got back up to the feet. I think that also speaks to the fact that Anders maybe isn't a top-tier wrestler when it comes to keeping guys on their back. But maybe Santos has just really figured out how to scramble. I think time will tell on that one as we see Santos take on better wrestlers and Anders continue to fight. But, you know, Anders did a lot of things well, but it was Santos's game. I mean, the ground and pounding landed was brutal. Yeah, he really beat down Anders. It's going to be real tough to finish Anders within a fight in terms of getting a stoppage, apparently, because this guy can go full Walking Dead zombie mode and just survive. And he was so out of it after that third round. But I'm very glad that both Thiago Santos and Eric Anders got that fight of the night bonus. It was a no-brainer. Those guys deserved big, fat paychecks for taking this fight on short notice and delivering a hell of a main event. Looking forward to see what Eric does back at middleweight. I think, again, he continues to impress me even in losing fashion for Thiago Santos. I think he likes how he felt at 205. It's probably where he's going to fight moving forward. And he obviously looked great getting the victory over Eric Anders.
I would say the result that really surprised me about this event had to be Andre Uhl getting that win over Hen Barral. That was a fight that I really thought was kind of Andre was in a bad position. You understand why he took the fight to get into the UFC. You know, that one really stuck out to me. You know, Lil Nog, the TKO win. I did have him on my DraftKings lineup just because I thought there was some great value there. You know, Cowboy Oliveira goes out there and gets a quick win. I think, I think we all kind of expected that he was going to go out there and get a win. DeBronx Charles Oliveira, another submission win. Outside of that, anything that really kind of stood out to you about this card?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, man. Freaking Hennen Burrell, man. That first round was okay for him, but, man, rounds two and three against Andre Uhl. Not great. As far as what you mentioned, Little Nog winning was awesome to see. You know, a return to form, getting the victory. Outside of what you mentioned, I would say, oh, also including shout out to Charles Oliveira for breaking Hoist Gracie's submission record. But outside of what you mentioned, Rianna Marcos, Marina Rodriguez was an all right fight. You know, majority draw, very as close as it can get. But the fights that really stuck out to me outside of that was Livia Renata Souza against Alex Chambers, just pure domination. Sergio Moraes against Ben Saunders, pure domination, takedown, submission, takedown, submission, takedown, arm triangle choke, get the tap. And then, you know, we saw two retirements. Talis Leites get the victory over Hector Lombard and then retire afterwards after a career that saw him fight for the middleweight title. And Evan Dunham gets sent to retirement with the knee to the body, with Francisco Trinaldo getting a high-quality victory over Evan Dunham. So those are kind of the results that stuck out. But you mentioned it, lots of finishes, very enjoyable card, and just a card I would recommend people go and watch. Most of the fights were entertaining, or at least you had a good finish.
Yeah, definitely enjoyed watching that card. Of course, the night before, it was Bellator 205. AJ McKee, boy, man, what a knockout he had over John Teixeira. Rafael Lovato Jr., that submission win against John Salter. Also, Vitor Ortega gets a win. Patricky Pitbull gets a win over Roger Huerta. That fight was a lot closer than I thought. I thought that just Patricky would just wipe the floor. I don't know if maybe he took... You know, maybe didn't take Roger as serious. I thought his hands were down a lot in that fight, which was kind of weird. I don't know if, you know, maybe it was just because maybe he thought Roger couldn't knock him out. But Roger did land some good strikes in that. AJ McKee, I saw the line calling himself about being the greatest fighter. I'm like, okay, well, I like the confidence, but we got a long way to go there. And after that fight was over, I sent AJ McKee Daniel Veitchel. And some people were like, hey, is that too fast? But I'm like, at what point do you not give AJ McKee? I mean, what, he's what, 11-12-0 now? Let's put him in number one contender fight. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, dude. To beat John Teixeira the way AJ McKee did in 69 seconds, a phenomenal number, is something where, and nothing is too soon for you in the featherweight division. Once you beat John Teixeira like that, any fight makes sense. AJ McKee, man, he passed the test, and that's kind of what a lot of this card was. I mean, Lovato passed the test against John Salter. Roger Huerta passed the, he's still a pretty solid fighter test despite losing. Like I know Patricky probably did take him lightly, but just looking at it from Roger's perspective, I thought he looked passable, man. He looked smooth, and he had some solid offense. But it was all about passing tests, and for Lovato, obviously a middleweight title shot is in his future. And for AJ McKee, again, a fight against Weichel, a fight against any top-tier featherweight makes all the sense in the world, because this is a guy coming off his most impressive victory over his most impressive opponent.
Yeah, and, you know, enjoyable card. I did watch it live. Come on, Bellator, man. Get rid of all this filler content. Man, God, there was so much filler content in that broadcast. But I definitely did enjoy that. Of course, Bellator 206 is coming up this weekend, of course, in San Jose, California. We've got, you know, Rory McDonald, Gegard Mousasi. We've got the star of the welterweight tournament. Come here in a couple of moments. You're going to hear my conversations with two of the fighters that you're going to be able to see on that main card, Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. Had great conversations with both of those fighters. But if you are looking to get tickets for Bellator 206 or any MMA event, you got to check out my friends over at Vivid Seats. You know I'm going to tell you about a product that I use. I used Vivid Seats last weekend to go to a Lightning game. If you go on my Instagram account, which is at Jason_Floyd, or my Twitter account at Jason_Floyd, you can see where I was sitting. Had some great seats for the Lightning game. So you want to make sure to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats when you're looking to purchase tickets for, you know, MMA event, a sporting event, a concert. Vivid Seats is the place you need to go.
Look, man, I'm with Vivid Seats. You can go, you can watch your favorite teams, your favorite artists perform in person. I mentioned it last week. I was thinking about buying Houston Texans tickets. They're my favorite team. I was going to go watch them be the lucky charm so they could finally beat the New York Giants, and they didn't win. I think I may have to consider buying tickets and traveling to Indianapolis to help the Texans get their first victory. But you go to Vivid Seats, they offer great prices. They offer an easy purchasing experience. And if you're going to go and purchase tickets at Vivid Seats, I got a secret for you. With the podcast code INFLUENCE, you receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats.
So all you got to do, go to the App Store, go to the Google Play Store, download that Vivid Seats app. Look, it's only going to take you a couple of moments. Download that app, enter that promo code INFLUENCE, receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. This is for new customers of Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats orders are confirmed and backed by a 100% guarantee. Yes, all Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. I'm telling you, it's a very simple process. I went there, ordered my tickets, and I had my tickets within a matter of moments. Got it right on my phone, because look, who really carries those paper tickets anymore? You get scanned, you go right in. So be sure to check out our people over at Vivid Seats. Once again, download that app and use the promo code INFLUENCE to receive 10% off your first order with Vivid Seats. And of course, I mentioned, if you're looking for those Bellator 206 tickets, Vivid Seats a great place to go to get a ticket. But of course, this is a great fight card, and now you're going to hear my conversations with Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. Had great conversations with Douglas talking about this fight, 185 pounds, other things. Aaron, always great talking to Aaron, a lot of great insight from him. So here's my conversations with Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast is a man that's going to be kicking off the Bellator welterweight tournament coming on Saturday night at Bellator 206. It is Douglas Lima. Douglas, as always, I appreciate the time. When this fight got announced, I think I was like a lot of people and was ultimately surprised that this was the opening round matchup between, because I think a lot of people would make the case, obviously Rory, the number one seed as a champion, and then you as number two and Andre as a number three seed. Were you surprised with this opening round matchup?
I was at first, you know, both of us held titles before, fought twice before, Well, you know, end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It's a tournament. You got to fight everybody. You know, you got to fight everybody they put in front of you to win this thing. So I knew one way or the other I was going to fight them eventually, you know, especially in this tournament. Believe, you know, like you said, you know, in the top two or three, you know, of the division. And I knew sooner or later this matchup would happen. So, you know, might as well just get it over with the first fight and move on to the next.
And of course, this is obviously the first time we're going to see you back inside the cage since that tremendous fight that you and Rory had earlier this year. Is that a type of fight, because it was so close, that did it take you some time to kind of move on past it, and does it still kind of live with you?
I don't know. Every day I think about it still, you know, because it was a fight that, you know, lost the belt. You know, it was one of the biggest fights of my career. This and that, but it is what it is, man. I learned from it, you know. I thought about it for a little bit, but, you know, I'm past that now. You know, I'm past that. I know what I did. Everything was on me, you know. The mistakes, you know, what caused the loss was all on me. So, you know, can't cry about it too much. Just move on forward to the next. You know, we got a big chance of getting that title back. And, you know, we'll rematch with him as well in this tournament, you know. So, right now, the focus is Koreshkov. The focus is to win this tournament, you know, and then we think about that and the rematch later on, you know.
When Rory was talking to the media about his fight on this fight card, he had said that, he said this, he says, tough, gritty fights like the ones with Lawler, Conda, and Lima aren't his favorite, but they taught him to push himself and break down walls and stay composed and relax. And I was wondering, has there been a moment in your career where you can kind of see what Rory is talking about, a fighter that, because of their fighting style, made you kind of, you know, look at things of how you need to, you know, take your game to another gear?
Yeah, you know, definitely. I like, you know, that he says, you know, breaking barriers, move on. Yeah, sometimes it's not easy, you know, when you're fighting, you hurt, you know what I mean? And just to move on forward with it, you know, kind of forget about the pain, forget about the injury, just keep moving, keep fighting. You know, it's not a lot of fighters that have that, you know, and Rory is one of those guys that has, you know, so it's very, you know, respect for that, respect to him for that, you know, because, you know, the injury that he had on his leg, for example, against my fight, you know, that's a pretty tough injury. I know it hurts a lot. You know, I felt that pain before. And, you know, just be able to fight with it, you know, is very difficult, you know. So props to him. And like I said, it's not every fighter that has that mentality and that will to keep going, you know. So definitely learn a lot, you know, with, you know, fighting him, you know, definitely learn a lot.
We have talked in the past about your preparations for Koreshkov, and obviously the first time you talked about the past of the injury situation you're going through there. But how would you say preparations for this fight is different than your last meeting back in 2016?
Yeah, healthy. Health is the main thing, is the main word over here. You know, I'm able to do everything now. You know, I did the whole camp without a problem, you know, when it comes to injuries, you know, so that's going to be the biggest difference, you know, against a guy like him. Got to be healthy, man, because he's good everywhere. He's a strong guy. He's tough, you know. You got to be ready. You got to be ready every second, you know, of the fight, because, you know, everything he throws is with bad intentions, you know what I mean? I think same with me, you know, so both of us really try to finish the fight at all times. So he's the type of guy that you just got to be ready. You know, I'm sure he's thinking the same thing, you know. So, man, this is going to be a great fight. It's going to be a good one. You know, like I said, I'm healthy. I'm ready. Can't wait to show that, you know, on the 29th.
I was reading an article based off an interview you did with MMA Junkie, and something that caught my eye at the end of the quote, you talked about, you know, how, you know, every fighter gets better, you get better, he's gotten better. But at the end of the quote, you said, I've changed a few things in my training that I will show him in the fight. Now, obviously, I know you're not going to, you know, share, oh, I've done this, that, but have you altered your training on how you're preparing for the fight now as opposed to the previous times you fought him?
Yeah, you know, I changed some stuff But it's not just for him, you know, it's just for myself. You know, I believe you always got to look to improve. You know, there were some holes, there were some gaps here and there. And I'm always trying to get better, man. I'm a guy that I'm never satisfied with myself. You know, there's always, you know, barriers to break, you know, as far as training and learning. And, you know, I change a couple of things. You know, like I said, I'm always trying to improve. You know what I mean? I'm trying to give them the best, you know, give the fans the best fights possible. And, you know, everything that I see that I can work on to get better, you know, I'm going to do it. You know, so that's a little something that I added, you know, to my training camp.
You know, speaking about, you know, not always being satisfied with what you've done, what would you say is the most satisfying victory of your career?
Honestly, man, every victory for me is very satisfying. Every, doesn't matter what, you know, my first fight of my career to the last win of my career, it's always the same feeling. It doesn't matter what's in the line. You know, because, man, all the sacrifice that we put in training camp, you know, man, the crazy diet, the crazy weight loss, you know, what you put your body through. And at the end of the day, I mean, when you win, it's just so good. It's just satisfying, like I said. And, so, man, it really doesn't matter the fighter, the fight, you know. For me, what matters is winning. Because, man, the sacrifices that we do for training camp and to get ready for that moment, you know, it's a lot. You know, it's a lot on the body. It's not for everybody. You know, and it doesn't matter which fight it is, which win it is. Satisfaction is just winning, you know.
You mentioned about that first pro fight. So we got to go back to July 14th, 2006 at Wild Bill's. What do you remember about that night?
I remember getting my hand raised, you know, it was a knockout, a flying knee knockout. I don't know. I think they had that win as a submission, but it was actually a flying knee KO, you know. It's crazy, man. I was actually at, you know, I was 18 years old or 19, I think. I was very young. I was at the beach the week before that fight. You know, I didn't even know I was going to fight. And then the promoter called me when I was there and said, man, we got the fight, you know, next Friday you won. So, you know, I'm at the beach. I trained for a couple of days, maybe caught 6-7 pounds, ran and fought, you know what I mean? Not in too good of shape, but I was so young, you know, and I didn't drink. And I was ready, man. I remember just flying with that knee, finishing him and getting the hand raised. That's all I remember, you know what I mean? But it was a good feeling. It was a good feeling, man. We got a flash KO in the first professional fight. You know, that's a good feeling.
But, of course, you've got this fight here. I got to imagine you're still paying attention to what's going to go on between, you know, Rory going up to 85 and Gegard. You have any thoughts on how you think that fight's going to go down?
Honestly, I think it's going to be a very even matchup. You know, I trained with Gegard for a little bit before. I think it was last year. You know, he's a big guy, you know. I believe, you know, he's bigger than Rory. Rory's not small neither, you know, for the weight class. But I think it'll come down to the weight difference, you know. Let's see how Rory's going to be able to deal with that. As far as skill, I think both of them are very similar. They're both good striking. They're both good on the ground. You know, as a fan, I'm excited, you know, to see this fight. Let's see how that's going to play out, you know. I said this before, I just hope I get out of my fight without an injury so I can go watch it live, you know, not from the TV, but I want to sit front row to see that fight. That's a good one. So let the best man win. I don't have a winner for that one. You know, let the best of them win, you know.
I mean, obviously, the next year, your entire mindset is on this 170-pound tournament. But are we inching closer and closer to you going up to 185?
Every time, you know, I say that a lot. Every time I'm cutting weight, every time I'm dieting to make 170, I always say that this is the last time I'm moving to 85, screw this, but, you know, it never happens. You know, it never happens. So we'll see. Maybe in the near future, I definitely believe I can compete at 185 without a problem. You know, I walk around 200, 205 pounds, so I don't think, weight's going to be an issue. You know, I think I'm a pretty decent size, you know, for middleweight. But we'll see. Let's see what happens. You know, like you said, the first thing for me right now is this tournament. You know, got three big fights ahead. Just got to keep winning them all. And let's see. Let's see after that, you know, what happens. You know, maybe after this tournament.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this on Bellator 206. Of course, this will air live and exclusive on DAZN. If you want to get a subscription to DAZN, just go to DAZN.com to get that all set up. Douglas, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to seeing this fight here against Kravchuk.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of Bellator 206 on Saturday night, September 29th, of course, live on DAZN. It is Aaron Pico. Aaron, as always, I appreciate the time, man. You just keep topping yourself every time you step inside the Bellator cage. So how can you top your most recent performance?
I think the biggest thing is just going out there and using my skills. I've improved so much even from the last fight. I keep improving each and every fight, and that's what you ultimately want to do. So I just gotta go in there and relax, like I have been doing, and just let it flow. But it's gonna be an exciting night.
I recently said on the show that this was when it got asked a question about the fights that I'm most interested in the rest of the year, and this was a fight that I brought up between you and Leandro Higo. Obviously, Leandro coming up from 135 pounds, when Bellator comes to you with this fight offer, was the name Leandro Higo a little bit of a surprise?
To be honest with you, I saw the name. I said, okay, where do I sign? Let's fight. Confident in my abilities, but as you said, he is a tough guy. This is probably the biggest fight of my career so far. And, we're ready for the challenge. I mean, one thing that stuck in mind, he's Brazilian, come to fight and, put on an exciting fight, but we're prepared for everything that he throws at us. And I hope he's ready for everything that I have, because it's going to be some powerful stuff coming at him.
What do you think the biggest challenge is, the biggest challenge he offers you?
I just think he's got more experience, obviously. I think he's just kind of all around, just good everywhere. You have to respect him everywhere. But I feel I could take the fight anywhere I want the fight to go. If I want to take him down, just all my coaches need to do is snap their fingers. If I want to stand with him, I can out-grapple him. Definitely going to be able to out-condition him. He's going to be able to, you know, get me tired. So it's just everywhere, just being aware. If I use my skills, stay relaxed, it's just a matter of time.
I get the sense, and I don't know if you get this sense as well, of the MMA fan is like, at what point are we going to see Aaron use his wrestling? Do you get that sense as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I just haven't, you know, I just let my body take over in the cage. I mean, if I hit you once with my left hand, it's going to hurt you. If I hit you with my right hand, it's going to hurt you. So, honestly, I haven't had to use it, but I'm prepared to use it for sure. I mean, I can take down anybody in the world. I've got, obviously, a high pedigree of wrestling. I wrestle all over the world. But I think the fans like to see knockouts on the feet. And I thought I could go in there just looking for a knockout. It just happened. So, yeah, I have not used my wrestling, but the thing is if I am going to use my wrestling, it's going to be even a longer night for him, so, or any opponent. If I get on top of you, good luck getting up. So, but I'm prepared for everything that he has to throw at me. That's for sure.
I saw something on social media the other day. It was talking about Freddie Roach being in your corner for this matchup. What would you say the best advice that you've gotten from Freddie?
The best advice I've gotten from Freddie is just one thing I can I can honestly say working with Freddie is just he's constantly trying to improve himself in the MMA. So we're constantly just putting our heads together, coming up with combinations and certain things that would work. I work with him, in boxing obviously, and but it's kind of a mixture of both. I spar boxing. And then, we hit pads like, well, this worked in MMA, and we're constantly putting our heads together trying to come up with certain things for MMA. Biggest thing that comes to mind is just his willingness to learn. You know, he's got a crazy amount of world champions that he's trained, but he's constantly trying to improve himself and learn certain things in MMA. So I think me just recognizing a great coach like that, having an open mind, is eye-opening. It's just no matter how many championships you win, there's always something to learn. So
I was reading an article based on comments that TJ Dillashaw had said about you, because you two have worked together a little bit, and he called you one of a kind. When you hear TJ, who obviously is a champion, say that, you know, it's obviously it means a lot. But for you, when you train with TJ, would you also kind of consider him one of a kind as well?
Yeah, absolutely. The respect is mutual. I mean, watching him train I've been with him now for the both Cody fights is just, you know, nonstop work. I see what a UFC champion, you know, puts into his craft and his lifestyle, and surrounding himself with good people is just like you said. I respect and admire him a lot. It's just him going out there and all the pressure that was on him, leaving camps and stuff, but little did they know that, little did Team Alpha Male know that this guy was working his ass off while they were all trying to, you know, I'm not involved with that. I don't try to involve myself, but little did they know while all that was going on, he was in the garage grinding away. He was with Dwayne, grinding away, watching his diet. Like, it was cool to see him go out there and no matter what the bullshit was, he put it all aside, put his head down and just, you know, train. And it was really cool to see him, you know, go out there, win his belt and defend his belt. It's just, it's respectful. It's respect.
Being around him, you've been around, you know, various champions in MMA and in boxing as well. Have you noticed a common characteristic in all of those fighters that you said, you know what, I need to have that characteristic or this characteristic? Is there something that's really stuck out to you about, you know, people who have made it to that top level?
Biggest thing is just consistency. Just all the guys are just, they show up every day and they know what the goal is, and to be the best in the world. I'm surrounded by guys. This is what they do for a living. This isn't, you know, I work and then I train for fun. No, this is what they do for a living. They're consistent. They love it. And that's the biggest thing I see. Showing up with your work boots and putting in the work, surrounding yourself with a great team and being consistent. And the most important thing is just having it within yourself. And you put that all together and you will get to the top.
You know, looking at you at 145, I mean, the way you keep climbing the ladder every fight, there's always a step up in competition. And I do wonder, does there get to a point where, you know, if your teammate AJ McKee is a champion, would you go back up to 55?
To be honest with you, I'm too small for 155. At the way that my weight is right now, it's just so hard. I would have to put on a bunch of weight to make 155. The thing is about going up to 155 and the way that I work with my nutritionist and strength coach, Sam Calavita, it's just not a couple of months where you put on the size and you're going to be at 155. It takes a long time. And I'm around 155 as a trainer with Saad Awad, and that dude is a big guy. You know, there's no way that I'm a 155er just standing next to him. And I see the way that, you know, how his body is, and he's working with obviously the same strength and conditioning coach as me. And I think my stature, my frame is perfect for 145. So I would stay at 145 for sure. Cause that's the best chance for me to get to the top. I mean, 145 is my weight class for me to stay, but not to say that I won't be at 155 in the future, but for a couple of years more, 145 is perfect. I mean, that is my weight. And one thing going, first working with Antonio, he said, why are you even at 155? There's no way you should even be at 155. You're a 145 pounder. And I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. And so back to your question. No, I 145, I'm going to be here for a long time.
you know, obviously this fight card kicks off the welterweight tournament Bellator is doing. I mean, and obviously you're very familiar with the tournament format. Are you kind of nudging the Bellator people saying, you know, we should do a tournament at 45?
Yeah, that would be awesome to do a tournament at 145. I think that would be probably the most exciting weight class that Bellator has. You know, 170 is a really, you know, great. Yeah, every weight class in Bellator is exciting, but at 145, I think there's a lot of guys there that have earned the title shot and are capable of winning it. And I think a tournament would be a really cool thing. People would work in my favor as well. I mean, I'd be ready for a tournament. And yeah, man, may the best man win. It would be a crazy year. But yeah, I mean, anytime you get to be in a big time tournament for a belt, best believe I'm game for it.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight come up here on Saturday night, September 29th, exclusive on DAZN. Of course, just hit up the DAZN website to set up your subscription. You can watch Aaron's fight against Leandro Higa. We'll be a part of this main card. Aaron, as always, I appreciate the time and look forward to seeing your fight, man.
No worries, man.
Daniel, there was my conversations with Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. Always enjoy talking to both of those fighters. Interesting, you know, Douglas talking about, he's, you know, the 185 pound talk kind of always really comes up with him really during fight week because of cutting down to 170 pounds. And Aaron Pico, I mean, I love this matchup with Aaron Pico and Leandro Higa. This is a great fight card, you know, regardless of how you look at it, you know, from this main card. I mean, I think all the fights on the main card, I'm very interested in. By the way, they did add a sixth fight to the main card, which is going to be Gaciano Bolanos versus, I'm not even going to try to butcher Gutierrez's first name. Obviously, look, that is a matchup where they're trying to feature Bolanos on the main card. Also, you got Kerry Melendez on that fight card. But when you look at the other four fights on this main card, I love them all. Pico, Higo, Lima Koreshkov, Jackson Vanderlei. I mean, look, it's an old-timer fight. Musasi McDonald, obviously that main event. Really looking forward to this fight card. I will tell you, I did sign up for DAZN last weekend, Daniel. They need to work on their customer service. That's just being honest. And so this is what happened, Daniel. So I get on the computer, get it all set up, and I had started the sign-in process at one time, you know, was setting up my account, and then I finished it up right before the Joshua fight. And so I was like, all right, let me pop on my Fire Stick, and then I'm like, realize, okay, I forgot what my password was. So I do the whole reset password thing, not getting the email. Like, must have tried it four or five times, not getting the email. So they have this little chat button, and I do it, and she's like, and she tells me, oh, our reset password is down. I'm like, so you just can't manually send me an email? No, we can't. I'm like, ooh, okay, you guys are not off to a good start when, you know, your big first fight's on here for U.S. customers. Not a good start, but when I had it up on my computer, the stream was decent. It did buffer out a little bit, so hopefully that's not a long-term issue. You know, so I'm going to download that DAZN app on my phone because I'll be out and about on Saturday night in Chicago, as I'll be up in Chicago on Saturday and Sunday. But really looking forward to this event. One of the things I did notice when I logged on to the DAZN, I mean, if you missed Bellator 205, man, the full replay right there. So if you are a cord cutter, the DAZN app is a great way for you to get it. But obviously that's I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to, if they've not signed up for the DAZN now, they're going to sign up for the DAZN some point before Saturday. And then I think the next Bellator exclusive event on the DAZN is not till December.
Wow, that is a couple of months to wait for some quality content. But I'm going to tell you what, maybe there'll be some boxing content. Anthony Joshua, that was a great way to get things started for DAZN. So if we learn anything, guys, write down your password because you never know if the password reset thing is going to be down. I've never heard of such a thing. I did hear good things about the stream. You said you had some buffering. Other people had said good things. My internet's pretty rough, so I'll give you a sense of where I'm at next week after watching the card. on my computer. You know, my computer is pretty far away from the modem, so that definitely affects the internet. But yeah, I will watch this on DAZN. Obviously, this is one of the biggest cards in Bellator history. Those top four fights, well, three of those top four fights are great. Rampage Vanderlei is like the pride version of Chuck and Tito, but a little less depressing, which speaks to how depressing Chuck and Tito is. I mean, Rampage is still a halfway decent fighter. Vanderlei, that one scares me. That one really scares me. But I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to pay attention. Lee Makhreshkov, just a phenomenal start to the welterweight tournament. A great fight, and a fight that I think Lima might win. Pico Higo, again, one of the top 10 fights I had for fights I'm looking forward to for the rest of the year. That's one of them because I just think the world of Aaron Pico and Leandro Higo is an incredible talent and will be a hell of a test for Aaron Pico. And the main event, we've been looking forward to it since it was announced. Musasi McDonald, I think it's going to be a phenomenal fight. And I think Rory is going to walk out of Bellator 208, the middleweight champion. I do, man. I just think this is a guy who he is going to give up a whole lot. But when we think of the difference in size advantage, I think that plays out in two ways. That plays out with the knockouts. That plays out with the wrestling. And Musasi may look to wrestle a little bit, may look to get a score knockout, but I don't know how big of a threat he is against McDonald there. And I just think McDonald has so much exceptional talent, so much skill that he's going to be able to outpoint Gegard Mousasi.
Yeah, I mean, that fight to me is a coin flip fight. I don't think it's going to be a big size difference. I think when they both step into the cage on Saturday night, they're going to be around the same. You know, looking at best fight odds, the only line they have up right now is Mousasi. McDonald has Mousasi -255, Rory at +215. I like Rory at +215. I think there's definitely some value there on that one. You know, Lima and Koreshkov, and people heard my conversation with Douglas, I was ultimately surprised that this was a first-round matchup, just because when you look at this field, I think everyone is in agreement. Lima's the number two seed, and Koreshkov is the number three seed. If we were going to see this thing 1-8, this is number two versus number three.
And there's a big gap between three and four. That's the other part of the deal. There's a big gap between one and two and three, and then there's a big gap between three and four. And, yeah, I can see why that's surprising. I think Bellator, it seems like the strategy is get the good matchups out of the way first, and we'll worry about what happens later. You know, they might find themselves in a situation where Eric Silva's in the final. But hey, man, maybe he's had some type of crazy, you know, revitalization of his career. But yeah, it just seemed like we want to make big fights. We'll build around in the first round, and we'll figure it out in the semis. But yeah, man, I mean, talk about a hell of a first impression with Koreshkov and Lima. It's a great fight. You know, the other two fights, I'm not super excited for them. But Cary Melendez is somewhat intriguing. And obviously, I think, you know, Rampage is going to beat Vanderlei. So it's going to be a long night for those in attendance in California.
Oh, God. I mean, there's I think it's like 18 fights, 18, 19 fights. We had all the prelim fights in there. You know, if you tell me I got to make a pick on the main event, I'm going Mousasi. It almost to me has split decision written all over. By the way, on your Wi-Fi issue, come on, Dan. You got to get that Wi-Fi extender, man. They're like, $20-$30.
Yeah, man. I've heard about it forever.
I just put one in another office. It works great. Works great. We had to put a Wi-Fi extender based on where the modem was to a going through walls in another room. Yeah, man, those things are great, man. They're not that expensive. But you know, Rampage, Vanderlei, look, Rampage could be 40 pounds heavier than Vanderlei in this fight.
I think he probably will be, dude.
But I don't think that you're going to see Rampage go out there and try to wrestle. I mean, someone's getting knocked out in that fight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Vanderlei. I think it's going to be really sad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, is this the last time we see Vanderlei, or maybe do they try to do a Brazil show, you know, maybe as a retirement fight for Vanderlei? You know, Pico Higo, man, that fight is so fascinating to me. You know, there are definitely criticisms of Bellator matchmaking that you can make out there. But this is one that, man, I just love this fight. You know, Pico, an interesting part is Freddie Roach is going to be in his corner for this one. And, you know, it's, and you heard my conversation. I said, you know, hey, what if AJ is a champion because he trains with AJ, you know, and he definitely made it clear 155 is not in his future. He knows he's a 45. It'll be interesting to kind of see what happens there. I like Pico to win that fight, but man, this is a great test to see where Aaron Pico is.
Yeah, man. And he goes a tough test. And obviously, if you told me after watching Pico's first fight that within, you know, a little over a year, he'd be taking on Leandro Higo, I would be like, man, Higo's going to run through him. And as good as Higo is, I still think Pico's going to win this fight, man. Watching his performances, his last three fights, he just looks special. He looks like all the hype, and that's why I think Pico's going to do it. But when you talk about jump up in competition, you will not find a bigger jump up in competition than from Lee Morrison to Leandro Higo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a massive jump. You know, Lima Koreshkov, I think a lot of people would likely agree that the winner of this matchup has, you know, very good chance that they are going to make their way to the final of this one. Of course, they'll face the winner of Daly and MVP, which hasn't been announced when that fight's going to take place. If Bellator doesn't do that fight in London, they need to turn in their promoter's license at that point, because you got to do that fight in London. I mean, you have to do the fight in London. Also, by the way, did see Bellator 206 is going to air live in the UK on Saturday, or I guess early Sunday morning, because it's about a 5-hour time difference. But it was great to see that they're putting their product live. Apparently it's just for this one, and obviously that's a situation Bellator has been dealing with. But man, I love this welterweight tournament. You know, and we're going to get into a buy-sell segment here. And very quickly on this one, in terms of the preliminary card, not really a ton sticks out. You know, Adam Piccolotti, you know, kind of is a name that sticks out to you, taking on James Terry. Also, you got Arlene Blenko taking on Amber Lee Brock. That one sticks out to me, but the rest of that prelims really doesn't stick out to me much. But it should be a great night of fights on Saturday for Bellator 206. So speaking of that, let's get into our buy-sell. And the first buy-sell is about Bellator 206. And we actually got this question on social media from @GuzzCongo. He says, is Bellator 206 through Bellator Hawaii its best stretch in company history on paper? And Daniel, I would say it's hard to not buy this. And I think a lot of that really has to do with the current Bellator roster to what it has been, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3, 4, and 5 years ago. So I would say it's a great stretch. I would frame this more as you look at the next three Bellator events. You know, you got, you know, this Saturday, and then in October 12th, that Friday night, is the Mitrione Bader card, and then the following night is Shell versus Fedor. So I'll buy this. I'll say this is the best stretch on paper in company history.
Oh, yeah, man. I think so, just because you have so many big fights. I mean, a lot of time Bellator's put on big cards, but they usually aren't surrounded by interesting cards right after. And that's what we're getting here. I mean, the only turn to the Punch Bowl will probably be the Backersville card, but even the Melvin Manhoff Chidi Andrew Kawani fight announced on it, I would watch that. But I mean, Thackerville, generally you get crappy cards because it's Thackerville. They take it for granted, where it's like they just put on guys who will sell some tickets. But do they even sell tickets to Thackerville?
Oh yeah, dude, they sell out every time.
I thought you just walk into the arena like you're in the Windstar. And you just go
that
and
casino,
watch.
That casino is so huge. You've been there. I've been there. That is a huge casino.
Yeah, it is. By the way, if they do the England fight, and by the way, I'm buying this. If they do the England fight with Paige and Daly, where the hell would they do it? When would they do it?
Oh, you got to go to the O2.
No, when? I mean, like, they don't have a card announced. Are they going to wait until after December 15th to do another first round matchup for the welterweight tournament?
Dude, I think this welterweight tournament is going to last at least a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked about that.
I mean, because here's one of the things about the welterweight tournament, you know, is if Rory wins on Saturday night, you've now stalled two weight divisions, essentially.
Totally.
If you are Rafael Lovato, you have to be, A, the biggest Gegard Mousasi fan, and B, the biggest Rafael Carvalho fan, because I would not shock me one bit if Machida beats Carvalho that he gets an immediate title shot.
Oh, Lovato has earned a title shot, but that title shot could be superseded by Lyoto Machida.
Come on, you know earning a title shot means absolutely nothing in MMA.
Absolutely right.
I mean, it means zero. I mean, we just see it so many times. And look, I wouldn't blame Bellator if they gave Machida the title shot. I get it. Next up, next buy sell is also on the Bellator Welterweight Tournament. Buy or sell, Bellator Welterweight Tournament is the best tournament in Bellator history. This is clearly a buy for me.
Yeah, but I agree with you. And the more I looked at it, the less it was a buy, just because this tournament, man, it drops off after like the top four guys, I think. After Rory, after Koreshkov, after Lima, and after Michael Page, the other four names aren't the most impressive in the world, Jason, to be completely honest with you. The problem is that's kind of the theme for most of the Bellator tournaments. You know, I went through all the brackets, you know. The lightweight bracket that first season was pretty interesting. Like, you had Alvarez, you had George Masvidal. That was cool. But again, a lot of the tournaments have the same theme where they have three or four real intriguing names, and then the other four are drop-offs. The difference with the Welterweight tournament here is the four names are really, really awesome, and the four drop-offs, they're somewhat interesting. John Fitch, somewhat interesting. Paul Daly, somewhat interesting. So I'm buying this. This is the best tournament in a promotion who made his name off of tournaments.
If there was a money line on Ed Ruth winning this tournament, I'd place some money on it.
That would be kind of smart, but again, I just don't know if anyone...
I'm not saying he will win it, but I think you would get some great odds.
For a guy who has a clear path to victory, and it's taking you down.
Now, unfortunately, he's potentially seeing Roy McDonald in the semifinals.
Yeah. Yeah, you may. That may be a that. I mean, that appears to be the dancing partner.
But what if all of a sudden, you know? I mean, look, and there is an alternate bout: Lorenz Larkin versus Eric Silva. Let's say for some reason Rory can't fight in the first round, and John Fitch is facing the winner of Larkin and Silva. Ed Ruth's path to the finals looks a lot clearer.
And if he gets matched up with a guy like Douglas Lima, you know, he might win that. Mm-hmm. He might play it real conservative and not get knocked out and not get tapped out and win that. So I see what you're throwing down.
If you were going to seed this thing 1 through 8, we know who the top three are. That's very clear. Where would Ed Ruth be 4 through 8?
Well, Ed Ruth, I think, would be the fourth most talented guy, but maybe the sixth, maybe the seventh biggest name. But
okay, all right. Let's go. Buy or sell? Ed Ruth beats these fighters. Michael Page.
Buy.
Paul Daly.
Buy.
It's a clear buy. Come on, that's a clear buy. He'll take Paul Daly down and beat him up on the ground. All right. I think he beats Neiman Gracie. John Fitch.
I would buy it.
Lorenz Larkin.
I would. That's the toughest one out of all of them, in my opinion. But I would sell it. I think Lorenz, that's a tough one, man. I would sell it, I guess.
Question is, does Lorenz stop the takedown?
Yeah, I know.
Eric Silva, that's a buy.
No, definitely a buy.
I mean, that's why you almost have to look at this. Worst case, you would put Ed Ruth as a 6 seed. Best case, 4 seed.
Totally. And that's when you can make some money off of a bet like that. But I don't even know if you'll find that bet anywhere.
Yeah, there's got to be some offshore account that you can make a bet on that. There's got to be. I guarantee there's someone listening that could probably tell us where that is, and they'd probably tell us what the number is. Next up, buy or sell with Donald Cerrone's picture that he posted on Instagram in a cast. He will still fight Mike Perry in November. When I saw this picture initially, you know, I don't know if you had the same thought. I was like, is Donald Cerrone trolling us?
You know what? I didn't have the same thought, just because I feel like Donald Cerrone is oblivious to trolling. I think he just wants to show off that he's a badass, that he can get a cast and get in a fight. I don't think this fight happens, man. I don't know. Fights usually get canceled, and the fact that we have proof of him in a cast, I'm selling this. I don't think this fight happens.
Yeah, I would have to sell it too. You got to think a commission sees that, and they're like, hey, you're supposed to fight in less than 2 months. I don't know. But knowing Cerrone, he probably will fight. He'd probably fight regardless. Our last buy-sell, Buy or sell, Bellator running a show the day before Bellator Hawaii is a bad idea. For those who have not seen, it was reported on Tuesday night by Brett Akimoto that the rematch between Brent Primus and Michael Chandler is set for the day before Bellator Hawaii, which my first initial thought was, I was kind of surprised they just went and put this fight on Bellator Hawaii, particularly the fact that it is a DAZN event. But I'm going to say it's not a bad idea, because I think that if you put this fight card in the St. Louis area, that Chandler will be able to put a lot of butts in the seats. So I say this is a good idea. Gives Bellator maybe a little extra promotion for that exclusive event on DAZN.
I would sell it. I don't think it's a good idea, just because I think it's going to oversaturate your weekend. I think if you're a Bellator fan, if you're an MMA fan, I don't know if you're going to sit down for back-to-back Bellator events on day-to-day, so that's what I'm selling. I'm not a big fan of back-to-back cards. I don't like it when UFC does the tough finale on one night and the pay-per-view the following night. So I will apply that same logic to Bellator.
Here's the question about that Bellator Hawaii event. That's the same night as the UFC on Fox card in Milwaukee. Now, they will basically air right after each other, but, something kind of note there. I know also that December 14th night is the Invicta has a car, which I don't think will really hurt Bellator either
Sexist.
Way or not.
Sexist, Chase.
I mean, it is on UFC Fight Pass.
That's true.
How many people are going to tune in on UFC Fight Pass to watch Greg Hardy fight on Saturday?
All the MMA reporters and a couple fans.
There'll be some Greg Hardy articles. You know there will be.
Oh, Greg Hardy, Nick Neal, every time. Oh, I don't want to put those two guys in the same category. I'm sorry, Nick Neal. But, like, these guys who, they're just always going to get articles every time they fight. I mean, Nick Neal probably won't get any more. But, it's like easy fodder.
Everything you hear is Nick is going to continue fighting. I'm surprised Bellator has, and maybe they have. I'm surprised Bellator doesn't try to get him on the Mohegan Show.
Yeah. By the way, I was listening to a Tom Lawler, and he was mentioning that Golden Boy reached out to him to maybe find that card. So.
Well, Gleison Tebow's on that card.
I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, look. I hope that event succeeds. I really do. It'd be great for the industry.
What's interesting is if they do like a Tom Lawler Hector Lombard fight. If Hector Lombard becomes a free agent after the loss to Leitas. I don't know what else you could do. But, both of us will watch the freaking card, because that's what we do. We're degenerates.
That's Thanksgiving weekend. I think I'm home that weekend. I think we played home that week.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a big weekend, man. We got that. We got Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson. They're doing like a weird thing where they play each other, I think, ooh. Thanksgiving weekend.
Dude,
and,
did you see the picture of Tiger walking up the 18th hole on Sunday?
It was chills. Hair everywhere going up.
Dude, it was just massive amount of people. And I saw, God, it might have been Pat McAfee who brought this up. He's like, look at all these massive people, and there's only two cops protecting Tiger.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Oh, look, you know what? There's not a ton of rock stars in golf, just like there's not a ton of rock stars in MMA. But man, when you've got a Conor or a Tiger, people love it.
And they both party like rock stars.
Oh, you know they do. By the way, before we get out of here, I'll mention on Friday night, I'm going to Jake the Snake Roberts is doing a little speaking deal here in Tampa. So me and my buddy are going to that on Friday night. I'm interested to kind of share stories of his wrestling career.
That sounds awesome, man. Jake Roberts is a guy with one of the great minds in pro wrestling. A guy who, God. If you wrestled in the 90s, you wrestled in the 80s, you battled a whole hell of a lot of demons, you were into drugs, and he turned his life around. Dude, but again, Jake Roberts is amazing.
Have you seen the resurrection of Jake the Snake on Netflix?
No, I haven't.
It's unbelievable. My buddy who I'm going to do this event with, he had told me about it. He's like, dude, you got to watch. And this was like, six, 9 months ago, he told me about it, and I watched it, and it was amazing. It goes into it, and, just basically the issues he was having, and I think, you look at anyone who's performed as he did for those amount of years. I'm sure you look at a lot of MMA fighters, it'd be the same exact thing. Some of the demons you deal with, especially in terms of the pain that your body's going through, is really interesting. Scott Hall was featured in that as well. and just kind of, you know, obviously the health issues that he had. You know, one of the things for the old school WWF fans, you know, it's for me, it's WWF. I've always wondered when he did the whole having the snake bite Randy Savage, was like that a venomous snake or what?
That wasn't a venomous snake, but that also wasn't planned. That was not really planned. I mean, yeah, you can't plan a snake to bite someone.
No, that had that no, but that had to be like, hey, this is what we want to do. Like, how did they convince Randy on that? Hey, man, we're thinking about this angle here where we put you tied up and we try to have the snake bite you.
Yeah, that was not planned, the whole biting aspect.
You can't
tell someone, we're going to have a snake bite you. That's insane. But yeah, apparently Jake didn't even like his snakes. Like, they were kind of scary or something like that. I don't know.
Really? I love this type of stuff. Like, just to kind of, you know, to hear, you know, people talk about their careers. And yeah, I mentioned the ticket says 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. I'm like, there's no way he's talking for 4 hours.
Yeah,
there's no way.
It's probably like autograph signings or something, but it'll be good, man.
I'm guessing he goes 60 to 90 minutes.
Yeah.
But I'm interested. I'm interested to see what he talks about. I saw the thing came up on my Facebook time. I was like, oh, that'd be kind of interesting to go to. It was only like $22.
Not a bad price. One of the geniuses in pro wrestling. And I'm glad he's still alive because, man, most guys with that lifestyle didn't make it out. But this guy made it out. And again, I can't stress this enough. Truly a genius in terms of his in-ring psychology. And his promo skills were second to none.
And, of course, if you're looking to buy any ticket to any type of event, you definitely want to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats. Just use that promo code INFLUENCE so you can receive 10% off your first order with Vivid Seats. Really do appreciate them being a part of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, coming up next week on the podcast, we are going to get you ready for UFC 229. Going to have Brian Edwards on to talk about the betting odds for UFC 229. Plus, going to be talking to Rakeem Cleveland, who is going to be a part of the PFL event, part of that light heavyweight tournament. Of course, he's going to be in the opening round taking on Vinny Magulace. Also, we're going to have Mario Bautista on the podcast. Of course, Mario had on the show before. You heard Mario's name come up a couple of weeks ago when Eddie Cha, the head striking coach of the MMA Lab, was on and talked about Mario being a young fighter to look out for. So look for that on next week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a cannabis podcast powered by Trulieve. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
We're in Trulieve.
We are. We're in our 4th Street St. Petersburg dispensary, coming to you live with products and information straight from the dispensary.
I love it. So we've done this once before in our podcast room over there at Flavor of Tampa Bay, but we didn't get a chance to film it. So I thought we'd go back and revisit this because I think people, obviously, this is about knowledge and people want to be aware of what products are out there. And I've just been sitting here and I've been learning about some products myself. And I thought I knew what I was talking about.
I think there's a huge misconception about what's actually available in the state of Florida, what's legal, what you can get access to going through a physician, of course, but what products we have on the shelf. So I want to go through all of them so people know.
The Cannabis Podcast, powered by Trulieve, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.